What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back to another edition of All the Smoke.
Welcome my brother. Back, bro. How you?
I'm good, man. How you been?
Blessed.
You've been shaking the bacon. You've been all around the country hosting camps, give backs.
Yeah.
You got a chance to sit down and relax at all lately?
Not really, but I'll sleep when I die. And, you know, I ain't leaving no money on the table.
Can't do it.
Mm-mm.
Can't do it. We got a special guest today, friend of the program. We've all got a chance to work with her over at Fox, Joy Taylor.
Hi, guys. Thanks What's for having up? Me.
Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your time. Let's jump right into it. The current state of sports media, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I think before it used to be we're reporting on sports. Now I think with the infusion of social media, now we're reporting on a lifestyle more than sometimes just what they actually do. What's your take on that?
Well, I try to look at covering sports as a human thing anyway. Because we're covering human beings. We're not robots. We're not merchandise. You're not a commodity. And we sometimes when we talk about sports, we tend to talk about athletes that way. Oh, he got traded here. He got cut here. It just becomes very inhumane. So in some ways, I kind of like that we get to know athletes on a more personal level through social media, through the different, you know, channels, this podcast, things like that. So it humanizes athletes in a way for not just the media, but also for fans to understand there's a deeper level to everything that's happening in sports than just win, losses,
points.
And you know, points and quantifying everything. So I think it's actually, in a lot of ways, a positive thing because it forces us to humanize athletes more.
Right. How has social media, in your opinion, kind of changed almost your job, sports media as a whole? Because, I mean, you see breaking news left and right. Now social media is somewhere where it's really a lot more negative than it is encouragement or positivity. So how do you feel like social media has kind of changed the landscape of kind of what you do?
Well, social media gave everybody a voice.
Some don't deserve it.
Which is a great thing. Social media gave everybody a voice, which is also not a great thing.
Right.
And that's not to be condescending, but I went to school for broadcasting.
Right.
I have a, you know, a journalistic education, even though I'm not a journalist. I still feel a responsibility to, you know, to some level. I can't just retweet anything.
Right.
You know, I try to be careful about what stories I dig in on.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm ignorant on a topic, I might not necessarily give my opinion.
Right.
Just because everyone is given their opinion about it. If I don't feel strongly or compelled about it, or I don't feel fully educated or I'm ignorant about it, I'm gonna lay out. So social media has kind of made everybody feel like they have to have an opinion about everything.
Right. Everything, right.
And you don't. And also, your opinion isn't needed on everything.
Right.
I mean, you don't walk into your house and tell your mama what you think about her dress.
Right.
Now, you have an opinion about her dress, but nobody asked you for your opinion on her dress. And if you give your opinion on her dress, you might regret giving your opinion on her dress. And it's just it's a way of life that's become normal to us. And overall, I think it's a positive thing, but it has changed how we do business. I mean, when I started in the business, we didn't use social media to level.
Right.
We did. I mean, it's 2007. It existed, but it wasn't an everyday. I mean, you're not checking Twitter every 30 seconds. I have alerts on for certain reporters, you know, just to keep track of everything. I think it makes our jobs easier in a lot of ways because we don't have to do, or at least I don't have to do sourcing. You know, I can let a reporter do their job. And if they're trusted and their reputation is, you know, strong, I can just use their information. But there's pros and cons for everything. I think the important thing is to just find what works for you and balance.
What do you think about the give and take now with athletes that respond to the negativity? Because now they're like, well, you're so-and-so. Why are you even responding to these people? But people don't understand when enough people are fucking nagging at you and saying crazy shit all the time, the human reaction is to defend yourself. Anyone says, oh, just ignore it, has never been in that situation. What do you think about that give and take? You know, you can take Kevin Durant or you can take several different athletes, that some people, Jack, that respond to the negativity but then are kind of looked down upon by sports media for doing it.
Everybody can dish it, but everybody can't take it.
Well, everybody doesn't get it either.
Right.
It's first very easy to tell somebody, do this or behave this way when that's not your lifestyle. If you're Tim 4567, nobody's bothering you.
Right.
Nobody knows who you are.
Right, right.
So it's very easy for you to say, Katie shouldn't respond.
Right.
You don't have 10 million people telling you you're a sellout every day.
Right.
Have that happen to you, and then we can come and have a legit conversation about it.
That's right.
I think whatever makes you feel confident or comfortable or whatever it is you want to do is what you should do. Don't let them get you emotional, though.
Right.
Like, people ask me all the time, why do I respond? Sometimes I just feel like it.
Right.
Sometimes I have to sacrifice someone. Like, people have been saying too much, like, you don't want today.
Yes,
like,
yes, yes.
You have to get roasted
today.
I got time, right. Yeah. I'm in the car, I'm in an Uber. Like, all right, it's you today. You're the one. But it doesn't hurt my feelings because I'm a face-to-face person. If you would not walk up to me on the street and say this, and we know they wouldn't.
Right.
Then it's not going to hurt my feelings.
Right.
But I also know that there are women who follow me who don't feel not as confident, but it does affect them.
Right.
And they don't want to respond that way, but they like when I do because they're getting the same things.
Right.
So, you know, there's different reasons why I respond. It works for me. It doesn't change my day. I'm going to leave here. I'm going to go watch the game. I'm going to enjoy my night. Like, it's not going to affect my day. But I think it's very easy for people who aren't in that situation to tell other people how to behave.
Yeah. I got bitten the ass by responding just yesterday, and I responded to some negative shit in the morning, and in the afternoon, I got a message, your Instagram account has been disabled. So, like, I'm off Instagram right now for responding to some bullshit. Really upset me.
Did you use choice language?
I threw a couple cuss words. Yeah, I threw a couple cuss words in there. That's for goddamn sure. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, bro, I don't got an Instagram account right now. Hopefully I can get it back because I just tapped a million. Don't steal that shit from me, Instagram. It took me a minute to get there. But anyway, carrying on, race, gender, and equality when it comes to sports media coverage right now, that's really kind of the center focus, which I think is great because it's they've always kind of been separated and you kind of have been able to keep sports, and sports has always kind of been that safe, that happy place. But now more than ever, we're just being real. There's, you know, there's race issues, there's gender issues, there's inequality issues in sports, and now we're discussing those. How do you feel about that?
As far as like women's sports and men's sports?
Just in general, just kind of doing, giving its, you know, its due diligence, or it's just.
Well, I think the time for just accepting what is for what it is, and I don't know, I'm gonna say turning the other cheek, or just putting your head down and working through it, or just doing things the way we've done it, and that's just why we're gonna keep doing it. Like, that's over,
right?
And it should be over. All those are weak excuses for behavior,
right?
And similar to social media giving people a voice, social media has been instrumental in spreading the word about inequalities,
right?
And I think, you know, the women's tournament this year was a good example of that.
Absolutely.
For me, it's like, why? What is the win? Why is this so difficult? Why can't you just see ahead of the curve? Like, so nobody walked in the room and saw that this was not equal and was like,
There were six weights in here and a whole weight room somewhere else.
Who ordered these Amazon weights? why does the men's room look like this and the women's room look like this? But because people don't do that, there still has to be this push for equality. And that's just one example of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just think the time for accepting things for what they are is over. And the faster that companies and organizations and leagues understand that, then there'll be less of that exposure happening.
Expose them. Like you said, you got to make an example out of them.
It's been the blind leading the blind for so long. It just feels good that everybody's opening their eyes.
Well, a lot of it is people in charge. I mean, it is what it is. Like, you've got a bunch of people in the room making decisions who are all the same kind of people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Look the same, think the same, come from the same background.
And the problem with that is, and then when you challenge that, it's like, oh, well, these were all the right people for the job or the best people for the job. Why were they the best people for the job? Mm-hmm. Because someone who looked like them decided they were the best person for the job, right, and so on and so forth. And the problem with having a bunch of people in the room making decisions who are all from the same place, who all look the same, who are all the same gender is, they're all gonna come to the same conclusion.
Right.
There's not gonna be any challenge because there's no perspective to have a challenge.
Or understanding, right.
So like the value of diversity, people who don't like diversity or like the idea of diversity always challenge it as, well, you know, we're making exceptions for people or this person didn't earn it. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's diversity isn't just for us, it's for you.
It's for everything. You learn something.
Right.
Not even learn something. You will make more money.
Right.
You will be more successful. Your employees will be happier. Your company will do better if you are inclusive. It's not about a slogan or a Twitter hashtag.
Right.
This is reality. The evidence, the numbers are there.
Right.
And it'll save you if that's all you care about from some PR scandals. If you can't see past all of that, at least let me boil it down for that to you. You won't be trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because there'll be someone else in the room who can stop you and say, this is not how people that look like me are going to respond to this, just so you know.
Right.
So I think it's just holding people accountable. And all of it comes full circle with, you know, we're not.
Regardless what race.
We're not taking shit anymore.
Everybody needs to be held accountable, not just all races.
It's not one particular race or persons or people. I think it's just very hard to have nuanced conversations on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of conversation is had now, which isn't a negative thing because at least it starts the conversation. But the next step, of course, is action.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sports is a good place for that to start because sports is a microcosm of society.
What's your thoughts on Shikari Richardson?
I don't know. I have lots of thoughts on Shikari. Well, I ran track. That's the sport that I played the longest. I ran track in college also. A huge FloJo fan.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get people to call me FloJo.
How'd that work out?
It never stuck. My name's too short to have a nickname.
J-Jo.
It's Joy.
J-Jo.
No, it's FloJoy.
FloJoy.
It didn't stick.
FloJoy.
It was my email, like everything. So, you know, I was very excited to see Shikari run and very disappointed like everyone else was to hear the news. But I think there's a million different angles on it. But the first thing for me is that I think what's being lost in the conversation about Shikari, first and foremost, this young person lost her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no empathy around the conversation. It's straight to follow the rules or the rules need to be changed or Michael Phelps.
And
or
how she found out too.
Yeah.
Like the reporter told her, that was the first time she heard that her mom died from a reporter
and
didn't even know.
There's no empathy for this young person who's clearly suffering from a loss that all of us can understand and empathize with, but nobody is putting that as the first thing that we're talking about. So first and foremost, like condolences to her for losing her mother and then losing her opportunity to compete in the Olympics and then becoming a week's worth of news conversation about her personal life and her decisions and all of that is a lot for someone to go through, first and foremost. Second, I think sometimes in life, really dramatic things have to happen for there to be change.
Right.
And I mean, we all obviously
are
comfortable with the use of marijuana.
Right.
Everyone around the world, everyone around our country is not. And that's okay. But facts don't care about feelings.
Mm.
And the facts are, it's going to be legal everywhere.
Right.
It's inevitable. It's not up to you and like where you stand on it morally or religiously. Like, it comes down to money, like everything in life. And it's going to bring in billions of dollars in tax money. So it's going to happen because it's already happened in 36 states and 4 territories.
So deal with it.
And it's legal in dozens of countries around the world because there's an understanding and education about it. So look, people don't like to drink. Some people don't think that you should drink, but it's still legal and there's bars on every corner.
Right.
Because the government makes money off of it and people like to do it. And when they stopped making alcohol legal, what do? It's speakeasies.
Right.
Like, people still drank.
Right.
People are going to do what they want to do. Now, when it comes to marijuana and athletes, I just think it's very hypocritical for leagues and organizations to not allow athletes to use marijuana or CBD or whatever it is when they're competing, but you don't test for alcohol.
Right.
And
which is worse.
And you're comfortable with opioids and Toradol shots and whatever else you can prescribe to someone to get them out on the court or the field or the track, but you have a problem with marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
So those things don't medically make sense.
Right.
Which then, of course, leads to the conversation of this is institutionally a racist policy.
Thanks.
Now, again, it's a very nuanced conversation.
A lot to unload.
So it's a lot to break down. The bottom line is the rule needs to be changed. It's legal here. I don't care about around the world because everyone's talking about, like, alcohol is not legal everywhere.
Right.
They still don't test for alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, I think the main thing with this is it doesn't matter if she uses marijuana every day or not. She told us, and who am I to say she's a liar,
right,
or
right.
you or anyone? She said she was in a moment of pain and chose to use marijuana legally because she was suffering.
Right. Point blank.
Period.
She wasn't competing high. So that's not what happens.
Right.
And even if she was competing high, it doesn't matter, obviously, because we all are aware of the effects of marijuana.
Right.
But she wasn't doing that. So there's 50 million different layers to it. Bottom line is, change the fucking rules so she can run.
The sad part is, as a community, so much has happened to us. They just expect us to be numb to everything. Like, just deal with it and move on. And that's really what I got out of it. Like, even though, you know, it's rules to everything, but at the same time, they don't expect us to be able to go through anything. Like, deal with it and move on. And they expect us to be numb to everything.
Yeah.
And that's not real life. We're human.
Right.
Well, that's why she tweeted, I'm human.
Right.
Yes, look, we can go on and on and on about the lack of empathy for Black women and,
right.
you know, their experiences and all of that. Again, a whole other podcast we could do. I just try to get to a simple thought about it. And it's empathy first for what she's going through. And the rule has to change. And I think that because she has become the star that she is, and because it's so impactful with the Olympics being right around the corner, which they've already had to postpone because of COVID, like, this is a very big, powerful moment. And everyone needs to be measured about, okay, it's time to change the rule. And not just for track and field, not just for the Olympics, for all these leagues. And find a way to provide alternatives for athletes that are not as harmful as the pills and the shots. And it's not like, I'm not on this whole holistic thing. It's just, these are facts. Like,
right.
I've talked to NFL players who are like, yeah, I took a handful of pills because I'm in so much pain just to get out on the field. Like, a handful. And my hands are, like, little. Like, this is a big guy. So, like, extra, like, I don't know. I remember how many more pills you could fit. I'm not exaggerating. You guys know.
Right.
So I just think it's time for change. And it'll happen, I believe, because she has so much power.
I'll take it even a step further, not only in athletics, but just the workplace in general. You know what I mean?
People
from a day-to-day deal with a lot of shit. And like you said, alcohol isn't tested so people can binge drink and be fucked up the next day or pop a bunch of pills and go to work. But if you medicate with cannabis, you're at risk of losing your job.
I don't want to measure what people feel like others should do because it's really like none of your business,
right.
you know?
To each his own.
To each his own. But it's a matter of education. Like, there's just been this stigma applied to marijuana that is not true. It's just not factually accurate.
Right.
And I don't have a lot of patience for, like, lies. Like, it's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a good level of education, taking the stigma away from it, making people aware of what it actually is and what people actually use it for, and stop making it be this like Nancy Reagan gateway drug thing. Like it's that's
the 80s bullshit.
That was a lie. Like, that's not real. Right. It's not real. It's not because it's my opinion. It's facts. Right. Like it is. There's actual. There's like educational things you can study so you can learn about this.
Joy. If she wasn't black, do you think it would have been a big of a deal?
No, I don't. I don't.
I agree, because the reason why I say that, because they was even attacking the Jamaican women, talking about their testosterone levels was too high for women, you know? And they was talking about the other woman, they can't wear certain, the swimmers couldn't wear certain things on the head, but you have a white lady, a white man who now a woman, competing in sports, but nobody's saying nothing about that and winning.
People are talking about it.
You know what I mean? Not enough.
It's not enough.
Yeah, not enough.
People are talking about it. I think, I shouldn't say that it's just because Sha'Carri is black. Sha'Carri is a star.
Mm-hmm.
Sha'Carri had a moment and everyone got excited about it.
Right.
And everyone was ready to see her. And in a kind of rare space for us as a country, because we don't agree on anything.
Right.
And everyone was excited about something that we only get every 4 years, which is the Olympics, which we can all get behind. It's a really interesting moment of a lot of different aspects coming together to get people talking. So I think it's important. And I hope, you know, I hope Sha'Carri's being supported, because she's being talked about a lot.
Right.
And that can be very stressful, I'm sure. But, you know, she is now the face of it.
Yep.
And I think it's important that she is, because she has that kind of star power to make a change.
Well, I don't think it's on the level that he was on, but I think it's, like you said, the star power that's going to get things moved is the Kaepernick situation.
Yeah.
You know, he had to be the sacrificial lamb. She is a sacrificial lamb in this situation. Fortunately, she's young enough to still be able to compete. She can compete later or next year and hopefully make the next Olympics. But like you said, I think the star power, it starts the conversation in sports, which leads to hopefully some sort of change. So
Right. Hopefully...
something good to come out of this.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18. My first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
That's my first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boog. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Bring excitement to your landscape with Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs. These flowering shrubs and evergreens have been trialed and tested by experts to make sure they look better and bloom better, so they're just as easy to care for as what's in your landscape now, but a whole lot more colorful and interesting. Look for Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs in the distinctive white container at your local garden center, or learn more at provenwinnerscolorchoice.com.
Let's go to your upbringing. Pittsburgh, but spent a lot of time in South Florida with your brother playing out there. Talk to us about your upbringing.
So I was born and raised in Pittsburgh.
Black and yellow.
Yeah, 412. I was actually homeschooled until my junior year of high school.
Really? What was that like? I couldn't imagine
it. A lot of people just went through this last year, being homeschooled in a way.
Yeah.
So really, from kindergarten to your junior year of high school, you never went to a real school?
Nope.
Couldn't wait to get out the house. Couldn't wait to jump off the porch. Yep.
That's why I'm outside all the time now.
Still catching up.
No, I played sports, though. So I was running track, AAU when I was really young. Played basketball, soccer, volleyball. Was a church kid, so I was always at church, always out in the neighborhood, and a bunch of kids in the neighborhood. So I was very socialized, which is why I'm only, like, kind of weird. but yeah, so I went to school at Woodland Hills where I played sports my junior year. So I kind of knew, you know, a decent amount of people because I was there with, you know, anybody who played sports at school there, I knew. So I was like half a new girl. But Pittsburgh is a great place to grow up. It's a, you know, it's a sports town, blue collar place. Yeah. My brother was drafted in 97, kind of not like, it was different then. Like, everyone thinks now, like, you know, you get drafted, it's like the whole, you know, big draft day, and Schefter's saying your name. And it was like, we had like a bunch of people in our house in Turtle Creek, and he's like stressing over the phone being unplugged at the wall. But it was interesting seeing him go from, you know, where we grew up to Miami, to then becoming a star in Miami, and then eventually becoming a Hall of Famer, which is probably why I look at sports, as we started talking about it, from a more human perspective, because I've seen him, try to make the team and then, you know, be so big walking around Miami, he couldn't like eat at restaurants, and then not being with the Dolphins anymore and got to make the team in New York, and then coming back and retiring. And then, you know, I was there with him when he got told he was making it into the Hall of Fame. So I've seen everything, the cuts, the trades. And I think like that and me being an athlete myself growing up, you know, getting recruited for track and soccer in college, I just have a different perspective on sports and just what it means when I cover people and talk about people. Like, I kind of look at it as whatever I say, this person's going to hear. Like, there's a camera right there. So This is face to face to me. So I think that kind of changed my perspective on things. And just being a woman in sports, like, everyone in Pittsburgh is a sports fan. So when people are like, oh, like, how'd you get into sports? I'm like, I don't know. How did you get into sports? I don't know. Didn't your family watch sports? And like, right. You had a favorite team and like the same way you did. But my grandmother and my two aunts lived together. And they were like, whatever they watch on TV all day, when the game's on, turn it over. And they're mad or they're happy, and then they're back to talking about the weather. Like, this was what these three old ladies did. So watching sports and being a sports fan was just never like a thing to me.
Natural. Go ahead, Jeff.
Who did you enjoy watching, and who were you rooting for?
So everyone's a Steelers fan, obviously.
Duh.
In Pittsburgh. You're not allowed to be there. Although my mom made her way around that. She's a Cowboys fan, but she liked them as well.
I don't blame her. I don't blame her.
Here you go.
Yes.
I don't know how she got away with that, but I love the Steelers, but I also love Dan Marino. He's a Pitt guy, so I always had like a thing for the Dolphins, and then I'm a root for whatever team my family's on.
Of course,
you know, we were talking to Mark Sanchez earlier about the 2010 Jets. I was like, I was a Jets fan that year. Like, Jason's, I don't know, I hate the Jets any other year, but Jason's on the team. Like, I'm a root for the Jets. What are you talking about?
Right.
It's family over everything. But yeah, I don't really get hurt by any team anymore, but I still let the Heat hurt me a little bit. Just a little bit. It's like it's different when you're doing national because I can't like dig in with the team.
Yeah.
You know,
but
I have to cover
Heat
everybody.
Fan. You're definitely a Heat fan.
I do love the Heat.
Yeah. Any memorable stories being around your brother and the Dolphins as you were kind of coming up in this space?
Let me see which one I want to tell. let me think. So Jason used to be really protective of me. He don't care no more. he's tired of dealing with me.
Like the
now,
big brother that'll intimidate you or fight you.
No, because he's older. He's 12 years older than me.
Okay, so
and I don't
big,
have a relationship with my dad. So he wasn't really like around that much growing up because he's so much older than me. And then he was in Florida. So, like, I pretty much grew up with him, you know, not being in the house around. But when I got to Miami, you know, he was like, you know, because I went to college down there. Like, this is my sister, whatever. And I was always really respectful. Like, this is his space. So this is MySpace days. And, one of his teammates reached out to me on MySpace. Like, that's the old school DMs. But you remember MySpace didn't really have, like, verified pages.
No.
So it was really kind of difficult to find out if somebody was like, this really is a legit page or just like a big time fan page.
I got
catfished
the one time I was on MySpace when we played for the Warriors together. I left the girl at the door because she didn't look the same in the picture than she did when she came to the door. So she got left there. But go ahead and finish your story.
I left at the door.
I left her. You don't lie to me. Because you're
lying
to yourself.
Catfish Jones. Or does she not look like her picture?
That's a lie. Whether you're talking or showing, that's a lie.
I got to see the evidence to judge, but I'll trust you on it. So anyway, I didn't know if it was him, but then I was like, he's not big enough to have a fake page.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, either this is a serial killer or like, this is him. Like, nobody's making a fake page for him. So anyway, he said something about my pictures or whatever. So I went over to Jason's house the next day and I showed his ex-wife. And she was like, oh, you got to tell Jason. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to tell him. But like, what is there to tell? Like, I'm not talking to him. Like, this is the entire exchange. So he comes in, whatever. I show it to him and he goes, I mean, nuts. He's screaming. He's so mad at me. I'm like, I didn't do anything. Like, I'm showing you, this is the entire exchange. Like, mm-hmm. I'm showing this to you. Like, I don't care about, first of all, I ain't going to risk it over this one. I'm supposed to be being right. For real. But like, like, I'm showing it to you. I'm like, why are you so mad? He's like, well, he saw you in the parking lot at the last game. I'm in college at this point. He's like, he saw you in the parking lot and he said something to me about you, like in the locker room. And I told him, don't talk to her. That's my sister. Right. Like, she's
off
not
limits.
She's not for you. Don't talk to her. Don't say her name. Like, nothing. Because he also didn't like him to begin with. So it was like,
so no flow joy for him?
This is a no flow joy thing. So I'm like, oh, so he did it anyway. Mm. He was like, yeah, I'm gonna see him tomorrow at the facility. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I don't care what you do. Like, I don't care what you do with him. It's not, I'm just telling you, this is what he did. And he saw him the next day and like confronted him. And the dude was like, I don't know what you're so mad for. There's mad bitches on MySpace. Which, why you would call someone's sister a bitch to their face after you just told you not to talk to her in the first place, I don't know. But anyway, they proceeded to fight and tear the locker room up a little bit. But I thought that was a funny story.
Yeah, that is good.
Because I was innocent.
I like that.
Innocent. Innocent on all counts.
He was willing to take a beat down over Flo Joy, huh?
Yeah, no, he was like, that's the definition of risking it all.
He risked it.
He risked it all.
You know, Jay is what? All pro, the man right here on the team. So you're really.
It wasn't a logical decision on any count. I mean, it was wild. It was wild to me because I'm like, I didn't even do anything. Like, I'm just here existing over here, minding my business, trying to, you know, pass
the
philosophy
school,
of
right.
art. And you're bothering me, but.
Tell us about Barry University, where you went in Miami. You were there for 4 years, 05 to 09. Talk to us about that experience and what it was like and how you kind of found your footing in broadcasting.
Joy making me feel old.
I transferred to Barry. I ran track my freshman year at IUP in Pennsylvania, and then I transferred to Barry. Barry's great. I mean, I love that school. I wound up there because I couldn't find how to get there. It was 2006, I guess. I was trying to find directions and I called. I mean, there wasn't GPS then. I don't know how old people are really watching this.
We're all sounding old right now.
You got me feeling old over there, Joy.
So I'm just driving around trying to find it. And I called the office and one of the secretaries stayed on the phone with me for like 40 minutes, got me there, set me up with a tour. And like, that was my whole experience there. It's very like small school, private school. And the professors really care about like you developing and learning every aspect of the business. So you learn how to produce, you learn how to make a show, you learn how to use the camera, you learn how to edit, you know how to do radio, like you do everything there. And I feel like it really helped me. Like it really gave me not just the education on like, you know, I graduated from college, but I really learned how to like be a broadcaster, what all this means, what all the technical stuff means. And I still apply that to what I do today. Like things I learned in college, I still use today. Probably the most useful thing, which I was not listening to at the time, was writing. Mm. All my professors were like, you have to write, you have to write, you have to write, you're gonna have to write forever. You're gonna have to write in every job you have. And I like to write, but I didn't understand the value of what they were saying until I really got into the business and was like, oh yeah, I guess this is the thing you got to do every day. And I still write every day. But Barry was amazing. And I'm really grateful I got to go there.
What are some of your early memories breaking into radio while you were in college?
So I started in radio at Barry, actually. We had a student radio station there. And I was a manager. And radio is just, there's no pause.
Right.
There's no pause on radio. You just have to make mouth sounds for as long as the mic is on. But that's why I love radio. Well, I really love radio because it gives you an ability to create a scene for someone while they're listening. So they call it theater of the mind. And a great radio show is part of people's routine. They're driving into work in the morning, or they're driving home after work, or they're, you know, a delivery driver, and they listen every day, and they just become a part of your life, and you become a part of theirs. Like, mm-hmm. what's going on in your personal life? Like, what your tics are? All of this becomes a part of your personality. And I love that radio gave you the opportunity to do that. And TV can do that, but you don't have the flexibility on television because you have hard outs and the commercials, and you have commercials on radio, but it's not the same thing. So yeah, but you have to be able to talk a lot all day, all day. So preparation is really what radio taught me the most, because if you're not prepared, you're not going to do a good radio show. Mm-hmm. We've all listened to terrible radio shows where they're just babbling and like scratching, trying to find something to say. And it's a lot of pressure, but I'm glad I got to start where I did, because every rep makes you better at anything, mm-hmm. whether it's sports, television, radio, whatever. And I got to get a lot of my worst moments out when nobody was listening.
That's always good.
Post-college, was there an opportunity or two that helped you break into the industry?
Yeah. One of the things that definitely helped me get from the next level once I started in radio, I mean, interning is very important. In this business, having an internship is important. I did two internships when I was in college, both radio, one at an entertainment radio station, music station, and a sports radio station, which both helped me tremendously. Because really, all of this is entertainment. Like, this is the entertainment mm-hmm. industry.
Right.
But actually being told I wasn't good enough for a job really kind of pushed me into what eventually became my first full-time job in the business. And then that led to me having the radio show in Miami that I had for a few years before I came to FS1, which eventually led me to FS1, which eventually led me to here on this couch with you two.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So every no isn't a bad thing. I was, ironically, I was filling in as an update anchor, which is now technically my
update anchor
job host. I was filling in. The regular guy was out. He was sick. Program director told me to do the updates. And so I did them. It was like a Friday. He came back Monday and I was doing them again because the guy was still out. He came in yelling, screaming at me, who told you to do updates? I'm like, you remember? I did them all day on Friday.
How quick you forget.
Yeah. And anyway, long story short, he told me I couldn't do them anymore. Then I talked to another boss and he was like, yeah, you're not ready to do updates. Now at this point, I'd already been at the station for a year. I've already graduated from college. Multiple internships, including one at the station I'm working in now. I'm doing fill-ins on the weekend. Like, I can read a 30-second script with some scores on it. I believe in myself. Like, I know I can.
At least that much.
I can do that. I can do it. And I was ready. Like, I just felt like I'm ready for the next step. But had he not done that, I probably would have stayed there.
Right.
Ooh. I would have kept working part-time, $8 an hour, whatever it was before taxes, and working 5 days a week on South Beach bartending. I probably would have kept doing that. But because he told me no, I was like, all right, I think it's probably time to move on. So I started reaching out and seeing if there were any other jobs available. Got interviewed for the executive producer job, got that job, and then here we are.
The rest is history.
Who are your mentors and role models in the media space?
I wouldn't say I had a lot of mentors. Dan Le Batard was really helpful for me in Miami.
He was
big for me. Dan is a big advocate of all of his people. He's a big advocate of diversity, obviously. He helped me a lot. And that was his station, 790, where I started. Well, I started at 560, but he was big. Joe Rose gave me my first internship in the business at 560, which is where I eventually got hired. DJ Laz in Miami was big. He allowed me to produce his show as an intern and gave me a lot of responsibility. But that taught me how to make a good show, how to be flexible, do things that relate to the community, really relate to the listener. So he was big. I didn't have a lot of female mentors, which I wish I had more of, but they're, you know, could use a few more women in the business.
Right.
But yeah, those guys definitely really helped me. And I've worked with amazing talent. Colin has been huge for me. Skip Bayless obviously did a lot for me in my career. He was great to me. Shannon as well. Jonathan Zaslow, my co-host in Miami, he really advocated for me. Dan Cilio, Sid Rosenberg. I mean, I've worked with just a lot of men that really, really pushed for me and fought for me, and that's helped me a lot in my career.
So, when did you realize, or what point in your career did you realize you were heading in the right direction? Like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be, and I'm starting to make waves in it.
So after college, kind of, I've had the ability to relate to a lot of kids who are coming out of college with COVID this past year, because it was very scary for anyone, obviously, who was graduating from school, trying to find a job, especially in this business. When I graduated from school, I was lined up to essentially take over the job I was already doing at Power 96 in Miami with DJ Laz. And the whole industry had a hiring freeze because Clear Channel, which is now iHeartMedia, fired half their staff.
Shout out iHeart.
Yes. They fired half their staff, so it froze the whole business. And so I couldn't get the job because I was technically an intern and they would only promote from within.
Mm.
And I wasn't actually an employee. So I was kind of stuck after school. I didn't know what to do. Like, I had all my eggs in that basket. Like, that was the job I was going to get. I didn't look anywhere else. I didn't know what to do. So I kind of like wandered around freelancing, doing random things for about a year and a half after school. And had a bad relationship, wound up in a kind of bad space. And I mean, I was just like completely and totally lost back in Miami, trying to figure out what's the first step to really like get on the path to launch my career. I don't even know where to go. Nobody's hiring. I don't have a job. I'm sleeping on my friend's couch. Ooh. I gave her that couch 2 years ago. I don't know what's going on.
Right.
And I was talking to a friend of mine who's very successful, and I'm complaining and I'm bitching, and he's like, just stop talking for a second. What's something you want for yourself in the next 3 years? It can be anything. It could be a man, it could be a car, like a job, whatever. What is it that you want for yourself in the next 3 years? Not 10 years. What do you want to be when you grow up? 3 years. I was like, I want to be full-time on air, radio or TV in the next 3 years.
Yeah, made that happen.
He's like, great. How much of your energy are you putting towards making that happen?
Just that, right.
And I thought it was a very specific word he used. Not time, not money.
Energy.
Energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't know, 10%? Like, I don't have a job. I have no money. I'm sleeping on a couch. I don't know what to do. My family's not talking to me. Like, I'm in a bad space. He's like, well, why are you surprised that's not happening for you then? And I don't know if it's where I was or like everything I had just gone through, or I was listening, or I was just at that moment in life, we all have it, where we like stop trying to figure everything out for ourselves and listen to people who know more.
Yep.
And I haven't strayed from that mantra ever since. I was like, okay, I have this goal. Everything I do is going to align with reaching that goal. And all my energy is going to go towards that. And energy is like, if you understand the concept of energy, it's a lot more than just one thing. And it has to be all of those things in order to be successful. Because people talk about, oh, I want to be successful all the time. Successful at what?
Right. What are you willing to do to get that?
Clarify.
What are you willing to do? But what is it that you want to be successful at?
Yeah,
do you want to be a successful entrepreneur? Do you want to be a successful doctor, a successful lawyer, a successful fashion designer, photographer, television host? All those things have different paths and different things you need to be doing right now to reach that goal.
Right.
And your energy has to be put towards that. It's just like sports. If you want to be the best player of all time, what do you got to have? Mamba mentality.
Yep.
You can't just show up and shoot around for 15 minutes and think that that's going to happen for you, even if you are the most talented.
Right.
So
you hear that, twins?
Mamba mentality.
Right.
So no, that was really like a moment for me that changed my, not just my career, but my whole life. But it definitely put me on the right path.
How do you feel, how important is it to become an inspiration for women in the sports business and want to be in sports?
It's very important for me because I had a few people who reached out, Leslie Visser and a few other people, but I think that I didn't really always realize the power or the importance of it. you know, when you're younger, you don't realize that people are like looking at you.
Right.
And now it's the most important thing to me, because what a lot of guys talk about, like, oh, like, why are women so supportive of each other in the business? Like, you know, the men aren't like that. The men are more competitive.
Yeah.
And it's like, listen, we all we got.
Not enough of us to be competitive.
we all we got. And the more women that there are in the business, the less of a thing it is.
Right.
Then people turn on the TV and see a woman and they're like, oh, well, that's good. That's good that they put a girl on the show. Like, no, it's just, this is what I'm watching. You don't think about that when you watch news. It's men, women, all women hosted show, all men hosted show. It's not a thing. You just watching the news. But with sports, that's not what it is.
Totally different.
And there's always a qualification, and there's always a need to explain why she's qualified for this particular job. And mm-hmm. it's always a thing. So to me, having more women in the business, a variety of women in the business, empowered women in the business is very important. So it's my main goal in my career to leave the business looking different than the way that I came into it.
Right,
absolutely. What has your experience been like at Fox?
Fox has been great. It's been a huge platform for me. Obviously, I started in Miami, which is a big market, but I wasn't a national voice before I came to Fox. And I hadn't done live national television. I worked for CBS Sports when I was in Miami, but working with Skip and Shannon was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you know Skip and Shannon, you know that that's like an intense show to do. And it's, you know, 3:20 in the morning. Ugh. It's a 2.5 hour show.
We worked the finals together in Cleveland.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a big undertaking.
Yeah.
But traveling, to your point, Cleveland and Oakland and the Super Bowl and McGregor fight in New York, like the U.S. Open, having all of those experiences really just, I think for me, helped me develop it in a huge way as a talent. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on mm-hmm. that show behind the scenes. And as a moderator, you got to make sure everything's going. Like mm-hmm. they're in their own zone. Mm-hmm. Like you right. got to do all the technical things. Prompter's down, you got to read it on the scripts. Hope you got your scripts in order. Like yep. there's a lot of stuff going on. So that really helped me a lot. And now working with Colin's been
he's
huge.
One of my favorite, by the way, just as far as people just talking their shit. Colin's one of my favorite.
he's the best, I tell him all the time, he's the best ad reader on
oh,
TV.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
On TV, yeah. Bro.
He does do a good read.
Yeah.
Colin's been great. He's a family guy. He's chill. He likes having his cocktail and his mm-hmm. His nice piece of fish. And he's one of those people that just really loves life. And that's a relief as a talent to work with somebody else who's very chill, because it's a stressful business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some shows like, listen, you can't call in sick. Like, I couldn't call in sick on Undisputed. I called in sick twice in 2 years. And I'm not sick a lot, but, like, there's mm-hmm. no one else to do the show.
Right.
It's 4:00 in the morning. You can't call. There's no one to come in. Mm. It's just like you better figure it out. So it's been amazing working with Colin. He's a huge supporter, and he makes the show really fun and easy.
You killed Undisputed, but people don't know how difficult it is. It had to be a strong woman with a high IQ
those two.
To run that show with them two, because I've been on the show. And she knows when to cut them off to go to commercial. She knows, like, it's not easy with two people like them rambling at each other the whole time. Like, they won't even think about a commercial.
It takes a respect to do that job.
Yep.
Because you do have to cut them off.
Yep.
So you got to know when to cut them mm-hmm. off so it's not a salty situation.
Right, right, right.
I mean, look, they're both professionals. They know we're doing a television show.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we got commercials. We got to get to break. We got to get to the next block. But they would just do that same topic for the
Never.
Next 30
right.
minutes
right.
if you let them. So the funny thing that people don't, or I guess the thing that they assume about Undisputed, and I don't know how it is on First Take because I don't work on that show, but on Undisputed, people are always like, what's it like in the breaks? I'm like, they're not fighting in the break.
Skip not even there. Skip
no.
walks off and
Skip
goes to the back.
Up, goes over to the corner. He's looking at his notes. Shannon's on his phone, or he's, you know, singing or whatever. Like, as soon as the camera's off, like, it's on to the next block.
Yeah.
So there's no real, like, animosity. It's like arguing with your friend. Like, all right, we're done. Where are we going to go eat? You know, that's kind of how it is. But people always think it's like war in the breaks. I'm like, damn, we would be tired as hell.
Great sparring sessions, though. Great sparring
yes.
sessions.
So I'm going to give you these 3 men that you've worked with and just tell me a little bit about, or what you think about each of them. Shannon Sharp.
Shannon has become one of the biggest stars in sports media.
Yep.
He was already obviously a star in football, mm-hmm. Hall of Famer, legendary broadcaster, but now he is like on a whole other level. Like
Unk
has become, and what it is because he gets it. Like he really understands social media.
Kills social media.
He understands how to do a great show. He understands how to do a great interview, and he doesn't take himself seriously.
Right.
Which I think is so important for that show, is that he's going to go at it with Skip. They're going to have their battles, their sparring sessions. But at the end of the day, he's going to crack a joke.
Right.
And keep it moving. Like he really knows how to maintain that balance. So he's so fun to work with, and just he's a great person.
Shout out Unk. Drip Bayless.
Drip Bayless.
I love that chain. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Skip is great. Skip has been, I don't even know how to describe what Skip's done, like just done for me in my career. A lot of people think Skip is like very hard and like mean. He's a passionate person, yeah. So I think he's misunderstood. And look, they do a show where they give their opinion. Some people are gonna like your opinion, some mm-hmm. people aren't. But I've seen Skip on the road. You've seen Skip mm-hmm. on the road. Don't get it twisted. People love Skip.
Love it.
They love Skip. Mm-hmm. And Skip loves the people.
Right.
And Skip is going to stand there after every show, shake everybody's hand, take a picture with whoever is there, talk to them for as long as they want to talk to him.
Yep.
And he really loves doing and cares a lot about doing a great show.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And he understands the importance of people are giving their time to us to watch this show, so I'm going to do
my best
by them and give them an entertaining show. Mm-hmm. And he lives and breathes and dies sports. Like, right. His wife wrote a book about how to be with someone who is obsessed with sports. Like, he's on another level with that. He's going to watch anything that's on TV when it comes to sports. But he's also just a really sweet person. Like, we had to work Christmas Day for the first 2 years of Undisputed, which for me is hard. I have a big family, and like it's hard for me to be on LA, out here in LA. Everybody's on the East Coast, so I can't go see them. Like him and his wife had me at their house for Christmas. Like they're amazing people, and he's been incredible to me.
I love hearing that softer side because, I mean, Shannon told us how much he advocated for him to be on that show. Skip said he wasn't going to do that show unless Shannon Sharpe did it. You know, so to be able to see the other side of Skip, because like you said, unless you know him behind the scenes, you only see Skip from the show, and you think, you know, you that's like only seeing us on the court. You think that's who we are as people, but to see and hear the other side, I think that's dope.
Well, Skip and I actually talking about being a face-to-face person. When I was talking to Skip and everyone about being on the show, some tweets came out from me about Skip.
Oh, in the past.
When I was in Miami. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Skip is a Spurs fan.
Die hard.
That's
why he loves me.
That's beef.
I'm a Heat fan, and I'm doing a show in Miami when the whole world hates Miami.
Right.
So Skip and I had already met a bunch of times before this, and then they came out, and I was like, all right, well, you know, if he doesn't want me to be on the show, I don't understand. Like, it sucks, but I understand. Like, this is what happens. But I was like, well, I want to talk to him. I'm going to tell him face-to-face, explain myself, and, you know, have a conversation with him. So I went and met with him, and I was like, first of all, I apologize. Obviously, I didn't know you personally. I don't feel this way. But, you know, first and foremost, I think it's important when you say something that harms someone, it's okay to really actually apologize.
No question.
Like, it doesn't make you less of a person.
Right.
It doesn't make you, like, anything. It's the right thing to do. If anyone in your life did something and they said, you hurt me or this or that, or you offended me, just apologize.
Right.
So I said, I'm sorry for that. And this is why we're doing the show in Miami. Everyone in the world hates Miami. You're a Spurs fan, obviously. Had some things to say about the
Heat. We at war.
And he could not have been better about it to me. He was like, it's cool. I get it. I get the show we do. I get the show you had to do in Miami. I've done local before. Like, fans want to hear only positive stuff about their team. And he was like, I understand this. This is what sports radio is. And, like, could not have been cooler about it.
Yeah, I love Skip. That's the reason why I'm still working Undisputed and started work because of Skip. Like, he loved having me on, not just because I brought a championship to the Spurs, but mm-hmm. he loved different aspects. And then I, you know, with him being so smart, he still want to hear what players have to say.
He's a showman. I love it. Like I said, I think those two together know how to make, they're great showmen. So they know how to make a great show.
I think the show triggers people because the beats of the show require you to have strong opinions you don't back off of.
Right.
And people think that the opinions are manufactured and they're not. It's just a well-produced show.
Very well produced.
So even if they do topics they agree on sometimes because they have to do the topic. But they're going to come from their angle, and that's what makes the debate. So it's not, what do you think about the game tonight? Well, I think Giannis is pretty good. I think Giannis is going to do well tonight. Okay, me too. But I'll say he's going to suck. That's not how it's produced.
Right.
It's a question, and then they naturally have other opinions. And that's how the show's produced. So people think it's all manufactured and it's not.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. Everyone, please welcome Coach John Calipari.
We're getting beat by 18, my first game in Kentucky. They're saying Cal's a bust. He can't coach. This is crazy. John Wall runs down the floor and makes a buzzer beater.
Yep.
You remember that, John?
My first game win I ever made. Remember you said you never seen me do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, DeMarcus Boogie Cousins.
I called Boogie. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to commit to Duke. And I hung up on him. Bro, I'm talking about, do you want to tell me how many times he called me all type of names? Bro, you really sold me out. You doing this.
Bro, I was sick. I remember that like yesterday, man.
Love you, John Wall.
Thanks, Coach. Love you, too.
You made me everything I am today.
Nah, you made me. You made me.
I love it. Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It wasn't even supposed to be my game.
AT&T connects and ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at a historic venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Last but not least, Colin Cowherd.
Great Colin Cowherd.
The great.
Colin is, he cares so much about doing a really good show. So we prep different, it's a little like behind the scenes. For Undisputed, our show meeting is 30 minutes, if that. It's usually 20 minutes. And it's just, here's the topics, here's the question, who's going first, who's going second. Here's where the guests are, everybody out.
Yep.
There's no conversation about what Skip's opinion is or Shannon's opinion is. They both go their separate ways with their producers and start working on their notes. And then I go to hair and makeup and start working on my notes. So there's no long conversation in the meeting. Herd is a 2-hour meeting. Mm. We're going over every single topic, every single angle. All the producers are weighing in. I'm weighing in. Colin's weighing in. So it's a completely different process to prep for the show. Now, there are two different shows. Mm-hmm. Colin and I do a 3-hour radio show, and that's a debate show, so the beats are different. But he just preps so much. Like, he doesn't like having space where he's just rambling. He hates that. Now, he and I can have a back and forth, but you'll notice we don't do a whole lot. We're not going to have a not whole segment where we're talking about, like, Doritos. Like, right. we're doing a sports show, and we want to do a good show, and he's going to show up every day giving you the best show that he can do. And he's just, like I said, he's a family guy. He loves hanging out with his wife. Loves hanging out with his kids. They have 6 of them together. So he's like all about his family and just enjoying life. Like he's a very cool, fun person to work with.
What went into moving from Undisputed to the Herd?
Well, so I started in radio, as we know. So, and I talk a lot, as we know. I think you can tell that by now. So when I started on Undisputed, well, when I came to FS1, I guess I should say, I was doing a 4-hour radio show in Miami before I came here.
How long is The Herd?
The Herd is 3 hours.
3 hours, okay.
So, and only an hour is on air?
Hours on air. I mean, with commercials and all that, like you're not actually talking for three straight hours, but it's a 3-hour show. I came to FS1 to be an opinionist. So you're not giving your opinion and you're a moderator. Now, it's a huge platform working with Skip and Shannon and a big opportunity. And it was vital for my career to do that show. But when I went into the show, I was like, okay, I'm going to do that for this these reasons and to get, you know, live television experience and all these things. But I can't do this show forever. Like, this is not what I came here to do.
Because you can't really give your opinion.
I can't give my opinion. I have things to say.
Right.
And this is not the role that I want to have for 10 years, 6 years, whatever. No matter how great the show is doing.
Right.
So I want, like, 2 years. 2 years, and then I got to move on. Also, you don't have any kind of life when you're on that show. Like, I got to be in bed, like, in bed at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Not going to bed at 9 o'clock, showered in bed with the lotion on at 9 o'clock.
Knocked out.
So you, like, during the week, you just don't do anything, which is fine. I still kind of don't do anything, but it's a very scheduled life. So I got 2 years of this. And Christine was leaving The Herd right around when the 2-year mark was coming up. So it was a kind of easy transition just to move across the studio.
Yeah,
Colin and I had done the show a lot together because anytime she was out, I would fill in.
Right.
So I already knew the beats of the show and had a pretty good relationship with Colin. So that's really how it worked out. And then over the years, I think Colin and I have just gotten to know each other better and the chemistry had gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
And then last year, having to work from home and do a 3-hour sports show with no sports on for 4 months made things now it feels like we don't even have to, like, we're on that next wavelength. Like, the, you know, we don't have to talk, just this, okay, you need me to talk here, let's go. Because that made things so difficult to work through. So but yeah, that's really the reason why I moved over.
How do you personally judge or kind of measure your performance from show to show?
You get, well, obviously, like, I don't get ratings and we don't really pay attention. That's for the suits to worry about. Like, we're gonna do the show and we're good. Our ratings are really good. They are really good. But I don't worry about the ratings. For me, if Colin is excited and he and I are having, like, a good exchange and the conversation moves past whatever the first level of it was, to me, that's a good show. It's not necessarily what people are reacting to on social media, because sometimes people just get upset about something you say, or and that's
anything.
Not necessarily engagement. To me, I'm like, if I feel like Colin was activated, like he has thought of something different or thinks about something different than the way he thought about it coming into the show, if he and I had a good exchange throughout the show and we had good guests and, like, the energy was just flowing, like, that's a good show to me.
So outside of that, you have your podcast, Baby I'm Going Crazy. So you guys are on a little break right now. And then Thursday Night Football Scouts Feed on Prime Video. What is it like just being able to maneuver in all these different fields for someone who loves sports so much? And, I mean, you're getting paid for all of it.
You're a little tomboy.
I mean, I am a tomboy. It's a blessing. I mean, it's a blessing to be able to do this. This is the dream, right? We just sit around and talk about sports and talk about what we love all day. It's not easy. I don't ever want to give out away that impression. It is still a job. It's still work.
Yes.
But if it's work that you love, it's not tedious.
Right.
So, you know, there's never a point where I'm just walking into work and, like, just doing work today. Like, there's a process. You have to watch all the games. Sometimes you don't feel like watching a game. Like, sometimes you just want to watch a movie. You don't care about this game necessarily because everybody doesn't care about everything all the time. Even if you are a big sports fan, that's only Skip.
Right.
Like, only Skip is in that space. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing. It's a blessing. It's given me the opportunity to meet people that I never believed I would ever be in the same room with, to see places all over the country that otherwise I might not have seen, be at events, be at historic spaces, and also to have a voice, which, you know, I think having a voice, especially in today's society, a voice that isn't just redundant or, you know, kind of pushed into the crowd is, I mean, that's an incredible thing to have and something I take very seriously. is powerful. So all of that to me is just, I just feel really blessed.
I got two questions. What are your career goals going forward? And what happened to Turn Up Fridays?
I should change it to Turn Up Friday. This Dance Party Friday.
Dance Party Fridays.
Well, nobody was in the building.
Yeah.
It's hard to do Dance Party Friday by myself. I look crazy.
I can
barely dance as it is. So that's what happened to Dance Party Friday. I guess I should bring it back because I might change it to Turn Up Fridays.
A lot of people.
Turn Up Fridays better.
But a lot of people at the office was looking forward to that.
I know, but like there's nobody in the office.
Right.
So now and then like people would see me coming and like run because they didn't want to be on Dance Party Friday. But yeah, that's what happened to Dance Party Friday.
Yeah.
But my goals, I mean, I want to have my own show.
Yep, of course.
In the opinion space, which will hopefully, you know, be coming soon. And then my long-term goal is to have my own network. I think being able to produce content for other people and give other people voices. And look, to be honest, you know, you have a lifespan on camera,
Right.
So long-term, I want to be able to transition into a space where I can create things for other people and, you know, tell other people's stories and be able to leave an impact on the business in that way.
Love it.
Dope.
Quick hitters. First thing to come to mind, let us know. Your female athlete, Mount Rushmore.
Actually, I think I've done this before, so I don't want to mess it up. I wish you'd have given this, me this before so I could really... All right, so don't quote me on this because I might change my mind, but gotta be Serena Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to obviously put FloJo.
I was about to say, don't do that. Don't leave her out.
It's got to be FloJo. You know what? I'm going to make this my personal Mount Rushmore.
That's what you're supposed to do.
That's all we want.
Because obviously, like, this is debatable. But for me, the women that impacted me, definitely FloJo, Serena Williams, Cheryl Swoops, honestly, for me, growing up.
Shout out Cheryl. She was on the show.
I love Cheryl. I thought her name was so cool. And I was just like, I'm going to be Cheryl Swoops. She had a shoe. Like, she was amazing to me. Big inspiration growing up being, you know, a 5-foot-tall basketball player. Thought I was going to be Michael Jordan. But Cheryl Swoops was amazing. And who did I love? Because I don't want to be disrespectful. You know what? Layla Ali.
Ooh, I like that.
Layla Ali. You know, because I be fighting sometimes. So Layla Ali, Cheryl Swoops, FloJo, and Serena Williams.
I like that.
Three songs that describe you in the present.
Hmm.
The Dance Fever.
You know what? I've been listening to a lot of Afro beats lately. A lot of Nigerian music. So I love Burner Boy.
What is Afro beats?
It goes. So some girl in the gym that I work at was on her Afrobeat stuff, and I asked the same question.
What is that, though?
It's African music.
Oh, African music.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I would say Burner Boy, yeah. You know, I'm always in a Tupac hit 'em up mood.
There you go.
So we'll keep that up there.
Number one in my book.
And it's got to be a song right now or just a song in general?
It's in the present. What you jamming in the present?
I'll do Masego, Mystery Lady.
Mystery Lady.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to pop a question in here before it's not on here, but I want to know, I've known you for a while, and you're always very mild-mannered, calm, together. Have you ever had a fan moment? Like, has anyone, like an athlete or celebrity kind of give you a fan moment?
Oh, yeah. When I met Junior Seau, I cried. I loved Junior Seau growing up.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. R.I.P. Junior. Because he played for a year in Miami, so I got a chance to meet him. Uh-huh. He was so cool.
Legend.
Actually, the picture as me, I'm like, and I'm crying.
Oh,
you
really?
You can see my eyes are watering. So, yeah, I was tripping when I met Junior Seau. I mean, I met Michael at his golf tournament. This is actually a funny story. This is a better Jason story than the one I told earlier. So Jason was playing with him. He was a Jordan athlete.
Yep.
So he was playing with him in his golf tournament, and he brought me down for my 21st birthday to the Bahamas with him. So I'm like, look, he's always bragging about how he sees Jordan all the time. And I'm a huge MJ zealot. So I was like, if you don't introduce me to Michael, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Like, we're not family anymore. It's ridiculous. Like, you know him. You're going to golf with him. I should get to meet him. So I'm being a pain in the ass little sister because he doesn't like doing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael walks in the first night into the restaurant, and I'm like, all right, let's go. Like, I need to meet Michael.
Come on, Jason.
I get a chance. I'm in the same place. I got to meet him. But I'm like, obviously very nervous. So I walk up to him, and I'm just like, hi. He's like, oh, like whatever. They're talking. He's like, oh, this is my little sister. I'm like, hi, nice to meet you. He's like, it's her 21st birthday today. So Mike's like, oh, it's your 21st birthday. That's so awesome. Like, let's go do a tequila shot. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go do a tequila shot. It's Michael Jordan. Like, I'm going to do a tequila shot with Michael Jordan. Let's go. And Jason was like, hell no. Like,
really?
No, he totally blocked it.
Wow.
I was like, what are you doing?
Come on,
can't do that.
I'm like, come on, this is Michael. And he's like, no, it's cool, Mike. Like, we're having dinner, whatever. And he's like, all right. And he's like, if you want that shot later, let me know. I'm like, I will when I get away from him.
Right.
But yeah, I was like, what are you doing? He's like, no, you can't go with Mike. I'm like, I'm not, it's Michael. Like, what are you talking about?
Can't tell Mike no.
Can't tell Mike no. So I didn't get to do the shot with Michael, but I guess it's a better story now. I talked to him about it at the Super Bowl, actually, with Colin, and he said the reason that he didn't let me go was because he was mad that Michael didn't ask him to do a shot with him. So he was being a hater.
Shot blocker.
Yeah. Shit. Top five most important sports moments to you.
These are tough questions, guys. These are lists. I like to put effort into these lists.
Let me get three then, because five is a lot. Give me three.
Okay. I think... You know, these aren't, well, I'll say important are just like things that come to my mind because right. There's obviously bigger social mm-hmm. moments.
Right.
Don't overthink it.
Yeah. Okay. So I think Tom Brady coming back in the Super Bowl against the Falcons was a huge moment.
Huge, huge moment.
I think that, for at least for me, solidified him as the greatest quarterback ever.
Right.
I think LeBron's first championship in Miami. Cleveland.
Or Miami.
I'm a little biased, but I do think it was important for him to get over that. And that, I think that era of the Heat, the big three in Miami is I've never seen any team get more hate ever at any point in my life. The first big three, LeBron leaves Cleveland. They do that ridiculous press conference, which by the way, I love extra shit, but I was watching that like, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
Like everyone's already mad at him. And then Miami's gonna do what Miami does, and there's the fire and the like lights and the fans, and we're just gonna rub it in everyone's face now and then talk about seven championships. I was like, oh, y'all never even played together yet.
Yeah.
Calm down.
High expectations.
Yes. Yes. Does it set the bar a little lower? But whatever, it worked out. So I thought that was a huge moment.
I think
you know
I
what?
One.
I think it's not an actually on the court moment. But I mean, I'm being very like recency biased here because I would do a better list if I could think about it longer. But I think Naomi Osaka
sitting out the
tournament was really, really important because she is becoming one of the biggest stars. She's the highest paid female athlete last year.
Right.
I think like $55 million or something. She's becoming the biggest star, not just in sports, but of course, you know, Serena is eventually going to retire. I'm not retiring Serena Williams, obviously, but like... Naomi Osaka is becoming a huge international star. She already is. She's becoming a superstar. And to see the support that she got for that and the reality of the impact of how unnecessary some of these, as someone in the media, these media press conferences can be, how intimidating it can be, how we expect everybody to have the same kind of personality and ability to absorb those moments. And for her to stand up and say she wasn't going to compete because she wasn't going to participate in it, I thought was a really impactful
Especially
moment.
For how young she is.
Yeah.
Where is your brother breaking the sack record?
She's going to be mad at me for that.
Right.
You know, it's weird when I think about my brother's career. I think when you're close to somebody, it in some ways desensitizes you to like some of their accomplishments are. When I saw him, like his... reception at the Hall of Fame. It was like really a sobering moment to like everything he's really accomplished.
Like your brother.
How great he really was.
He really
And I always knew he was great, but it's like...
But your brother,
it's
though.
It's your right. brother, so you don't really absorb it the same way as somebody who's a fan or somebody who doesn't know him. But yeah, I mean, he and I are very alike in a lot of ways, but he is a much more patient person when it comes to dealing with like the media.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that he played before I got in this business.
Yeah.
And now it's coming full circle because my nephews are about to be playing in college.
Right.
And, you know, hopefully we'll make the league as well. So I'm going to be covering them, which will be an interesting experience. Cool.
Five dinner guests, dead or alive?
Tupac. Tupac. Whitney Houston.
Mm.
She's my favorite. Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
Oprah, and Howard Stern. Is that five?
Wow. Yeah,
that's five.
Okay. I like that Howard Stern. That's his last little chance.
I need him to give me some pointers.
One message on the billboard, what would it be?
That's seen around the world.
Do your research.
Mm.
Man, I can't stand that shit.
Right.
I cannot stand when people say ignorant shit.
Yep.
When there is information available to you. I think a lot of people are more afraid of learning something and then their original thought being disproven
right.
than being educated. That is not cute. Who told you that was cute?
Right.
It makes me insane. As somebody who like understands I could get sued for saying something on air that isn't accurate.
Right.
I'm like, this, you don't have any kind of threshold for that. And we live in a time, we live in a post-truth society.
Right.
And the internet, for all of its, you know, glorious provisions, is also a place where you can get information that is completely untrue.
Right.
And I sympathize with people in that there's just a lot of information. It's hard to find the truth, right? To find actual facts. And you can wander across a blog that looks legit, all the graphics look good, but this is just an opinion space for someone.
Everything's Googleable.
Yes, but it is, but like, in a way it's not, because this could just be somebody's opinion. This
right.
this is not necessarily a fact. Like, where are you getting this information? Could you use this as a source in a college paper? Should be like the standard for where you're getting your facts from.
Right.
Like, has this been approved by multiple people from a high level of whatever this business is as actual information? People just get their news off of stickers,
right.
like internet stickers.
Yeah.
This is a meme someone made on WordSwag. Like, this is where you're getting your news from? It's maddening to me, because then they share it and it becomes
wildfire,
facts.
Right.
And then that person tells somebody else, and then all of a sudden it's just real and
right.
it's not.
Right.
So do your research and don't do it because for any other reason than you need to know what the truth is when
so
you're
you won't
saying.
Sound dumb.
Right, so you won't sound dumb. Don't you not want to sound dumb?
Right. It's about now, I mean, to me now it's about being first, not necessarily being right. And then you go back and you're not right, what do you do then? You know,
you're allowed to have an opinion, but you're also allowed to change your opinion.
Right.
You don't have the same opinion on life you had when you were 16 years old.
Right.
Nor do you, nor do I. I don't have the same opinions about stuff I had yesterday.
Right.
Because I have new information. We know we all went through this last year, right? And I don't want to get into like whatever is anyone's opinion about, whatever it is fine, right? But the thing that made me the most crazy is every time we'd get new information, everyone would be like, well, your scientists said it was different yesterday. That's how science works.
Right.
That's why they do research. So
right.
if the opinion changes, they have to tell you it's different now.
Right.
We have new information. You wouldn't go to the doctor and be like, I want that surgery. Do surgery they did it the way they did it 15 years ago. Like, okay, well, we can do it with a laser now and you don't have a scar and like you probably won't get an infection and die.
Right.
Like, no. You said before that this way worked. So I don't like this new way, even though it's been proven for 15 years. Like, you got to do it the way that was in the book. Because otherwise you lied. Like,
right.
it's not a lie. It's an update of information. And it's not just about the medical community. Like, in life, it's okay to change your opinion. Do your research.
Last question, Joy. Who do you want to see on All the Smoke? And you have to help us with your answer.
Oh, that means I have to book them?
No, just
make a call for
just
us.
Just connect the dots.
Send a text.
Well, I'm glad I was finally invited. You guys have been nice enough to come on my podcast, so
yes.
I appreciate it. And I think you were on the Facebook Live show, too,
yep.
like way back in the
yep.
day.
Yep.
Who would I like to see on here? I'd love for you guys to have Sha'Carri on here.
Awesome. We can get her for sure.
I think she would be a great interview. Who else? You know what? I think when Tom's not going to do the best interview now, but if you could get Tom Brady on here, I feel like you could finally get all the tea.
Mm. Well, you saying names, but you forgot to...
I can't book Tom Brady.
I mean, I'm just saying you got to help us. We didn't say book. We said help.
I'll tweet at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to get Sha'Carri on here, though, for starters. I would love to hear just more about her story from a comfortable space.
We come and get you, Sha'Carri.
Yeah.
We come and get you.
Well, that's a wrap, Joy. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Another edition of All the Smoke. Joy Taylor, you can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform, Black Effects. See y'all next week.
Peace.
This is All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeart Radio in partnership with Showtime. The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Ignite your passion for discovery at the Cosi Science Festival May 1st through the 4th. Experience 3 days packed with interactive community events featuring exhibits, live demos, and engaging conversations with experts in science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And on Saturday, May 4th, join us for the free Big Science Celebration featuring over 100 exhibitors, all with interactive activities to share. And of course, there will be larger-than-life science demonstrations, live music, and more from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. just outside of Cosi. Visit CosiSciFest.org to learn more.